Welcome to What in a Smut podcast,
where the books are horny and so are we. I'm Elle.
And I'm Kay. So what do we got going on in the Smutverse this week?
I'm just going to read you this post on Threads and make you guess why this person is under fire.
All right.
Quote, I've never really called myself an author. I realize today it's because the gatekeeping mean girls of the writing world lose their minds when you don't play by their rules. So fine, I'm not an author. I'm not a writer. Here's what I am. I'm a literary propagator. Have you guessed it yet? She continues, I've got dinner to make, dishes to wash, animals to feed, and a culture still worth creating because the vision is sitting so heavy on my heart it won't leave me alone. So I used the tools available to me, not to replace creativity, but to finish the thing.
Yeah. Is this a specific literary propagator that we would know the name of?
No, I don't think
so. Okay.
No. But I think best-selling author Farah Rashon summed up the internet's response by saying, just so we're clear, this literary propagator has too many dishes to wash and kids to feed to write her own books, so she uses a tool that was trained by stealing the works of actual authors who did write every word themselves while also having dinner to make, dishes to wash, and kids to feed. Call me a mean girl. But no, I don't consider her an author or a writer.
I mean, when you propagate a plant, you are quite literally taking part of a plant and putting it into something else to make it grow. Like, so her wording on that case is not wrong.
Nope.
But it looks like she probably typed it into ChatGPT to get the answer to it. That's so fucked up.
There's one author who co-wrote, quote unquote, her book with an AI that she gave a name. I assume it's like a ChatGPT that's been you know, personalized or whatever. And then did like an AMA where like the chatbot replied to like mean comments on the internet.
This is out of hand.
Yeah.
If I'm being honest, completely wild to me that people are putting that out there and it's not just like for rage bait.
I know. Isn't that wild?
Because you can absolutely get lots of attention on something like that if you're putting it out there as rage bait. But when people are like doubling down, that's insanity.
It's wild.
Read the room, I guess.
Yeah.
Is really what it comes down to.
That's exactly how I feel about it. Because like, it's one of those things where we still, I don't think, have a full grasp of how much our lives are going to be transformed by like AI.
Yeah.
By large language models specifically. And it is potentially short-sighted to like have such a hardline stance on like usage of it in any way, in any shape or form. And like, it is something that I am curious about, like as time progresses, like how few are the people going to be who are like, no, absolutely not. No AI, none. Like, this is human creativity. Like, are we a dying breed, you know?
Yeah. But then I also think about it. So like the authors of the world, mm-hmm. we're firmly against it.
Yes.
However, the nature lovers should also be firmly against it. Writing a whole ass novel using AI is utilizing so many resources. Like, if you think about it in terms of the power needed to draft an email through AI is like a bottle of water.
Water usage isn't, it's not, okay, to be clear.
Okay.
To be clear.
I love this. I love it when I get fact-checked by the techie.
I think we should include a link to Hank Green's video on AI water usage in our show notes, because this is like a common pushback, right, to AI usage in general. And I think of the many problems with it, water usage is like so far down.
Okay.
Like, it's truly not that much in the grand scheme of things. And it's not like that water is wasted. It doesn't just like get destroyed. Like, it gets recycled back into the system. It's literally just used for coolant. Like, it's not actually the environmental like disaster that a lot of people are making it out to be. It's really difficult to figure out exactly how much water is used by each query. And like, even when you add it all up, it's not actually that big of a deal. So I will send the YouTube link.
Okay.
And I highly recommend watching it because like there are lots of things to be angry about. Water usage is not really one of them.
But does it help with getting some more people on board with the anti-AI train?
I mean, I guess, but like, then it's just using misinformation to get people angry.
That's
which
true,
feels
which we don't like. We don't
a tactic
like
that we should not approve of.
Okay, fine, you win this round.
I hate to be the bearer of bad news.
That's okay. Either way, AI is bad and we don't like
correct.
It. And we especially don't like it when people are writing books using it.
I agree. Now, even an AI trained on the entirety of the internet could not possibly have conceived of the story we read this week. Okay?
So this week we read Phil in the File Cabinet by Katie Epoch. And the synopsis just says a piece of office furniture brings happiness to a dreary life. I have to say, I did say to Elle earlier today, where the fuck did you find this? Because in terms of weird, this is weird even by our standards.
I agree. And frankly, I mean, it all does come back to Fear Valentine. So you can just like, you can thank or blame her for this week's episode because Vera Valentine has a lovely resource on her website that has a list of pretty much like every sentient object romance that she knows about. And that is where I found this book. So
where would you put this on our smut scale?
I struggle to even place it. Like the problem is that there's DubCon in here.
Yeah, at the end.
At the very end and kind of at the beginning, which we can talk about. It's weird.
Okay.
It's interesting. So there's definitely DubCon. It's not as explicit as I feel like I would normally want it to be to rate this a level 4, but like
I mean, I
don't know.
Well, let's call it a 5 then. There's no plot. You find yourself questioning the specifics of how could that work?
I guess. But the reason I'm struggling is because, I mean, we don't even really get penetration.
Well, yeah, we do.
It's unclear if it's a blowjob or if it's penetration.
That's true. Again, yeah, this is all leaning more towards our icky, sticky tangle of tentacles.
I suppose. The caveat there for our listeners is that usually an icky, sticky tangle of tentacles involves tentacles. It involves multiple appendages. It involves multiple people more than, you know, your typical 2. But truly, I think this is just so baffling that it has to be level 5 because I have so many questions.
Yeah. I mean, we could call it like a 1 or a 5.
Yeah, that's the problem. It's like, it's not really all that spicy. It's just so what the fuck. So let's call this a 1/5.
Okay. I am fully on board with that because, yeah, it was really a what the fuck. And it's been a long time since we've had a what the fuck kind of situation here. That being said, we do have some trigger warnings.
And there should be more than there are listed.
So there's DubCon, workplace power imbalances, drugging, working in a call center, if you know, you know. And not sure what to call not knowing you're in a 3-way with a file cabinet, but I know I'd be a little mad if it were me. That would be DubCon.
Yes.
That would fall under DubCon.
It definitely would. You don't know that you're in a 3-way.
Yeah. What else would you add to that list?
Death?
Yeah.
Death.
Like accidental workplace death.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Accidental workplace death.
Yep.
With a weird amount of detail about it. And yeah, and then all of the rest, I suppose. I don't know, like there's so many HR violations here.
Yes. Oh yeah. I have a lot to say about the HR stuff.
I have so much to say about the HR stuff.
Like it's not just workplace power imbalances, it's like the worst workplace you could possibly imagine.
Yeah, and this makes me wonder. Clearly, I don't know about the call center, but like if you know, you know. Is this encapsulated in that? Anyway, How did the reviews look for this obscure sentient object romance that I pulled off?
It was so obscure that there were only a total of 13 ratings across the board for Amazon and Goodreads. So there was one rating or one review that was on both platforms. So this has a 4.0 on Amazon. There were only three Amazon ratings, and it's a 3.4 on Goodreads. Again, take that for what it's worth because there were only 10 ratings there.
Yeah.
But the single review says 5 stars, Cabbie is the best. As someone who's worked in a call center / office setting, I had to pick this up. The prologue, first chapter, was a bit sad. The humor kicked in once we were following the MMC Phil. This was fun, weird, and had some puns that made me chuckle. And that's all she wrote. That's all we got.
Yeah, understatement. And this novella was 34 pages.
Yeah.
I think it was too long.
Yeah. I think that the prologue gave us the background information on the filing cabinet, which we love a background story. We love to know an origin story. But
I didn't want the origin story.
The origin story didn't really make sense with...
It didn't make sense and it didn't matter.
And also, filing cabinets are not typically made out of wood.
No.
In my experience.
With all that being said, it was 34 pages. We're going to go through every single page. There will be spoilers.
Yeah.
If you would like to give Katie Epoch her page reads on Kindle Unlimited, there will be a link in our show notes.
There sure will.
And with that, do you want to get into it?
Oh, let's get into it.
So we start in the summer of 1971.
Yes. And we start with Janet,
mm-hmm.
who works in a sawmill.
Indeed.
In 1971, a woman working in a sawmill, she's a badass.
Yeah.
Because she doesn't work answering phones. She's not wearing pearls and heels to do the paperwork and reception skills. She is working on the floor, cutting the wood. Trying to have a social life when you've worked early mornings meant ignoring your sleep schedule most of the time. Being a little tired this morning was nothing compared to all the actual struggles she had overcome.
Mm-hmm.
So it also said that it's difficult that she works as a woman in a sawmill because her days were spent either being invisible to men because she wasn't in dresses and heels while she worked, or trying to be invisible because men thought they had a right to what was underneath her shapeless coveralls.
Yes.
And though this was set in 1971, I think that 55 years later, it still kind of rings true.
I agree.
Sadly.
Depressingly.
She worked hard. Her life was harder. The only thing that gave her a break from the pain of it all was getting fucked harder.
Huh.
What? That came out of nowhere.
Yes. Yes. Because we spent like 3 paragraphs talking about being a woman, like wanting to be a badass at work and then still have a social life and finding that balance. And then all of a sudden we're like, let's get some fucking action.
Some of the working with men has rubbed off on her.
Perhaps.
Time to get fucked.
Yeah. So what's really interesting too is that Janet has, I would say, a bit of the DubCon kink.
Okay.
Here, because she's talking about how it's difficult to get male attention because she has strong muscles and calluses from her day job, right? Mm-hmm. But then once the beer hit, it melted the inhibitions of the men around her. Janet could see her prospects improve. There would always be a hunter among the crowd who locked eyes with her and saw her as strong prey, someone who wanted to prove, probably to themselves and their inner demons, that they could overpower any woman, no matter their strength and size. The hunter hoped she would put up just enough of a fight that he felt like he was victorious. Janet made it enough of a fight that she could feel his desire through his muscles.
So, did you think that this is DubCon, though?
Yeah.
I read it more
someone
of
who wanted
a...
to prove that they could overpower any woman. Overpower is... It does not involve consent.
That's true. I think maybe I just kind of skipped over that because I didn't want it to be as dark as it has been recently. But I just read it as like somebody trying, she was kind of playing hard to get with somebody that, but you, yeah. I think you're right.
Well, and the fact that the author put DubCon first and then added another note about the end scene that she didn't think was DubCon implies to me that she thought this was DubCon.
Yeah. She thought someday someone would wake up the next morning and want to do it all again. Someday someone would want the hunt to continue forever.
Yeah.
And I think that I probably, have you read Willing Prey yet?
Not yet.
So that might be why I'm having a different perspective, because I read that and that's coming up in a couple weeks, listeners.
Yes.
So I already read that. So that also might be why I'm having a different perspective on this, but also that's a different situation than what is being explained in these two or three paragraphs.
Too. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But also, so like apparently she went to a college party and then she stayed out too late, had some good sex, and woke up the next day on a Thursday and went to work at the sawmill.
At 5 a.m. Yeah, so she dies.
Yeah.
She barely felt the saw biting through her wrist at first. Her body was just not registering pain right away. It wasn't until she was slumped over her station and watching her life essence seep into the wood that she started to feel the sting climbing up her arm.
And nobody noticed or nobody cared to help her is what it comes down to. No one cared about the wood that had soaked up Janet's life essence filled blood, and it kept going on its own journey of being cut, sawed, bent, and nailed. A fitting end, since Janet was most of those same things right before she donated her energy. What?
Yeah.
So it starts off really dark.
Yeah. It says, becoming wood wouldn't be so bad. Janet had to admit she was always better at being hard than soft.
Okay.
Now, she does not keep her name.
No, this is weird to me also. But also, it makes more sense when she says, because she does get turned into this filing cabinet, which we will get introduced to in just a minute. So it makes sense when she introduces her name as Cubby.
Cabby.
Abby. I have it written as Cubby. Abby. Oh, the filing cabinet. It makes sense, but also how weird would it be to have a filing cabinet say, hi, I'm Janet.
Yeah. But like, what's also crazy is that the rest of the story goes to great lengths to refer to the file cabinet as they.
That's true. That's a good point.
Like, we know that this is Janet.
That's an excellent point.
Unless the implication is that Janet just gave it life and this isn't actually Janet and this is actually just Cabby, but...
It's Janet. You're thinking way too much into this one. It's Janet.
I know, but then why isn't her name Janet and why doesn't she go by she, her pronouns? I don't understand.
Well, perhaps because she was never introduced... As, like, she didn't say, hi, I'm Cabby. I used she, her pronouns. Maybe our main character, Phil, was just like, there's a hole. I don't care.
That does not make this any better.
I mean, nothing's going to make this any better.
You're right. Anyway, let's meet Phil. Let's meet Phil and then decide if he doesn't care about the gender of the hole.
I mean, it's more so a not identifying it as one or the other, not that he doesn't care.
Okay.
But just trying to give it something, because, man, I'm grasping at straws here desperately.
Boy, we are reaching this afternoon.
So Phil works at a call center.
He does.
He is the lead of his own team. It's very clear that he doesn't fuck his employees and gets his paperwork done without working overtime. And now he's a manager.
Yes.
Because he didn't fuck his employees and because he got all of his work done, he was promoted to manager. The bar is low at this call center.
Yes. Yes, it is.
Yes, it is in most places in the world these days.
Indeed. So he manages other managers. And it says he is staring down at production reports, the kind of reports that turn every employee into a number and tell you if those numbers are hitting their numbers. So he loosened his tie and pulled out his emergency, in quotes, bottle of vodka from the bottom desk drawer.
Which is wild to me.
I mean,
this
vodka.
Is like, this is such a caricature of like managerial positions in the corporate world, though. Like,
yes.
100%.
Yes.
Except he doesn't fuck his employees. So
at least not yet.
That's true. A good point. everyone that comes through, every new hire, he speaks to.
Indeed.
And it says he probably looked into the eyes of every single hungry co-ed in this town. Eventually, they'd find his office and try to shoot their shot. Like, we don't get any description of him. We get no information that he's hot other than all of the employees are trying to sleep with him.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that's...
problematic.
No. No, I was actually going to say kind of creative. Like, Phil could be anybody. He could look like anything. He could be any nationality, ethnicity.
That's true. But the fact that all of these lower level employees are shooting their shot with their boss is wild to me.
It is. It is wild. It continues. The third shot of vodka didn't have as much of a burn to it. Usually that was the sign that he should stop. Fuck that. Phil was halfway through his stack of paperwork, and he was damned if he wasn't going to have a good time doing it. He was blasting his 2K twerk tracks and enjoying the memories of when he was more than just an empty husk of a corporate shill. Now, as a millennial.
Yeah. Immediately, this to me was like, I found you, Miss New Booty.
I mean, I agree. I agree fully. But also, who the fuck calls it 2K twerk tracks? He refers to them as like twerk music a lot.
He likes to get down.
Sure.
I don't know. It worked, though. It put a song in my head.
I mean, that's fair. Yep. We get a flashback to being at a bar on a Friday night, listening to the same music, drinking a drink that was called an adios, motherfucker. And he's reminiscing. He closed his eyes and remembered what it was like to be surrounded by bodies moving like cyclones.
This just makes me think of the trend that's on.
She moves a body like a cyclone.
No, not that. The trend that's going on right now on Instagram with people cutting to John Hamm dancing in the club.
Oh, yeah.
That's what that made me think of. But no, also the cyclone song that
says if anyone came into his office right now, he would blame it on the vodka, but he knew he was the only one in the building.
Also, why would you blame it on being drunk at work?
Yeah, that seems like a bad idea.
Yeah, not his best.
No.
But also not his worst, as we'll see.
Yes, it's going to get much worse. Over the early millennial bass rhythms, he heard a sultry voice. It's about time I saw you do something for yourself. I was hoping it was going to be stroking, but this is probably more fun. And Phil is freaked out by this, as he should be.
Yeah, thinking he's the only person in the building and hearing a voice.
Yep. And then he is looking around his office, and the voice continues, "Don't stop on my account." The seductive voice wrapped around him and sent chills up his spine. The air was filled with the smell of pine trees and a faint hint of coffee.
I mean, I can't wrap my head around the fact that this is made out of wood.
That's your main concern?
Yeah. The rest of this stuff, we've read stuff like this before. It's not the fact that it's coming to life. It's the fact that it's made out of wood and it's a filing cabinet. In my head, filing cabinets. Yeah, because it's present day.
But the filing cabinet presumably was made
in the
70s. Was
there for a while. Listen, I mean, I've worked in places where they haven't changed any of the...
I have too. I've never seen a wooden filing cabinet.
Yeah.
I'm just...
Like the metal filing cabinets. Yeah, this was 1971. So perhaps back then. But like metal filing cabinets date back to at least the 80s.
They date back further than that, I'm pretty sure.
Let's see. Auto-filled. So somebody else read this book and asked the same question. Metal filing cabinets emerged in the late 1880s and early 1890s.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she should have been a steel worker instead.
There we go. That would have filled in all of these plot holes that we have.
It would be a less of a what the fuck if she was a steel worker and she was made into a metal filing cabinet instead. But I digress.
Indeed. We're in his office. He's looking around for the voice. It says that it took way longer than it should have to see that no one was in his office or outside it or even out in the call center, which he could see through a plexiglass window next to his door. He was alone. Why didn't he already have the blinds down?
Yeah, right? Well, he was just dancing.
He's drinking vodka in his office.
That's
getting
fair.
Drunk.
That's fair.
He whispers, "What the fuck?" to himself, running his fingers through his non-existent hair. He buzzed it. It was just easier that way. But that doesn't stop the habit of nervously running your fingers through your hair that every man has when he doesn't know what the hell is going on.
You know what they do when they don't have hair? They wear hats and then they just fix the hat constantly instead of fixing the hair.
That's funny.
So it does say, like, he's looking at the bottle of vodka like, what the fuck is this? And then he leans against his desk and looks up at the file cabinet. Looks up? What? How big is this file cabinet?
It does say
it's about chest height and 3 drawers tall. The top level has 2 separate drawers with bigger single drawers for the other two. The handles are silver with the label holders above the handles. He's always thought it looked like eyes and a mouth. Tonight, the eyes blinked back. Isn't there a name for that when you see faces in inanimate objects?
Aside from anthropomorphizing?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're right that there is a word for it.
Called when you see faces in everything. Pareidolia. Oh. It's a psychological phenomenon where the brain perceives familiar patterns, especially faces, and random stimuli like clouds, electrical outlets, or textured surfaces. Humans are hardwired to spot faces due to their social importance, so the brain quickly finds face-like structures in inanimate objects.
Huh, cool.
Yeah.
Brains are just pattern recognition machines.
That's true. So he says to himself, what the fuck? And the cabinet blinks again. The second drawer's handle started to curve upward slightly. Was it smiling? And she says, more like, what are you fucking? Which doesn't make any sense because he was dancing, not fucking anything.
This is true.
But he responds in an appropriate way and says, insane, apparently.
Uh-huh.
Yep. That made me laugh.
It made me laugh also. He's trying to find his chair, and just sitting down was a bit of a challenge. The wheels kept moving his target, and the liquor was making his muscles slightly unreliable with small movements. The writing is good.
Yeah. The author's a comedian.
Yes, I did see that.
So, yeah, the writing was good.
But the cabinet says, oh, shit, Phil, you're not insane, just drunk and in need of some fun. Of all the suits who have come through this office, you are the most straight-laced of them. And he says, what the fuck are you? And the cabinet blinked again. There was a feeling they were rolling, even if there was no visual evidence of eyeballs to roll. Okay, that wasn't a great sentence. Some thing, the cabinet emphasized the word thing, like they were insulted, that has been watching a lot of people have more fun in this office than you ever have. You need to loosen up more than just that tie, Phil. Pour yourself another shot and put that music back on. It's not my favorite genre, but I'm not the one who needs to unbunch my panties.
He says, excuse me, filing cabinet. And she says, call me cabbie.
And you're excused.
But also, this is where we should have gotten call
her
me
name.
Janet.
Yeah.
Although there's also that whole, like, in books and movies when something is, like, reincarnated, which essentially this is what that is, they don't remember a past life. So.
But we'll never know.
Yeah.
We'll never know. We never get cabbie's perspective.
That's true.
So we don't know if cabbie, like, made the choice to become non-binary and to lose Janet as their name.
That's
like,
true.
Good perhaps point. Maybe Janet is their dead name.
Maybe. Excellent hypothesis.
I'm reaching. Okay. I'm reaching.
Cabbie says, come on, Phil, it's midnight. Turn your music back on, pour yourself another shot, go back to moving that gorgeous body again. So
apparently he's hot.
This man has been getting daily, it seems like, objectified by his coworkers, his
office
employees,
furniture.
And office furniture. Yes. So he says, fuck it, why not? It's not like this cabinet had legs or arms or anything. It couldn't come to the other side of the room and touch him. It did have a mouth, though, Phil chuckled to himself. He wondered what that mouth could do. What'd that mouth do?
I hate it so much.
Me too, but, like, that's what I said in my head.
I desperately need a man to confirm or deny that this is what men are like.
I need more information.
Phil was getting down in the office. He was pretending like he was back on that crowded dance floor. When the You Sky crew showed up after the last shift, the DJ would play the real twerk tracks and it would get crazy. Phil missed letting loose at that bar. He missed not having the stress of hundreds of employees and not giving a shit about reports. That I get. But like, he was getting down in the office and pretending like he was on the dance floor. Do men do that?
I don't know. I mean, yeah, I feel like the occasional man will, if a song's on that they like, they might, and they think nobody's watching. That's what it comes down to, is I feel like a lot of men would not do this if they knew people were watching.
And you think that if a sentient file cabinet doesn't count, and therefore any man in this position would get
maybe
down.
Not any man, but
he would get down in the office and listen to the real twerk tracks.
I mean, you've never like had music on and started dancing in the kitchen? Same thing.
I have.
Yeah.
But like, of course I have. I just like, I don't think that's okay. Of course
that's
I have.
Fair.
Very fair.
Who do
you take me for?
I'm just asking because you're wearing a tie today. I thought you were trying to.
But that's the thing, is that like, while I'm wearing this tie, I feel the patriarchy.
You don't want to loosen it a little bit and
weighing me down.
Loosen that tie a little bit and get down, twerk with your bad self. No?
I think this is internalized misandry, because it just seems like to me that men are not capable of this kind of freewheeling joy.
Listen, if we have any male listeners that get down in their office when nobody's watching,
please comment.
And please comment. I love to dance.
Commenting I love to dance also opens you up to being interviewed by me, because I have so many questions. Anywho, in reality, he was partying in his office with a file cabinet. He couldn't decide exactly where that landed on the pathetic scale. Maybe he should have been hooking up with one of the cuties in the quality assurance department downstairs after all. He will, eventually.
Yes.
I don't like calling them cuties.
Nobody did call them, like, what was it? Hungry co-eds.
Gross.
Yeah. So the file cabinet says, come on, Phil, take your shirt off. Like, so he not only was dancing, but he turned this into a striptease. But yep. The most vanilla striptease ever.
Yes. Because he folds up all of his clothing carefully.
Their banter is like wildly awkward.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Phil says, keep your files in your drawer, cabbie.
Out of the corner of his eye, he thought he saw cabbie's tongue hanging out.
Yeah. Like,
what is the tongue made of?
You know, those,
is it a piece of paper?
Is it one of those, like a receipt roll, you know, with the calculator thing that.
Yes.
The roll.
Like it unfurls.
Yeah.
Like a party thing.
Yeah. So Cabbie replies, I got a drawer you can put your file in, big boy.
This author, I can't tell if this is something that I recognize and therefore I should be ashamed. You know, like,
I can't wait to
my
hear.
Sister in Christ, what were you doing at the devil's sacrament? It says, Cabbie replied with a wink and then let out the best bachelorette party woo girl woo he had heard in a long time. And all I could think of was How I Met Your Mother.
Yeah, the woo girls.
The woo girls.
Yeah, I thought of that also. That's really funny. So he did take off his pants and also fold those nicely. And then gets closer to the file cabinet. He felt something warm and damp slide up the front of his boxer briefs. He jumped slightly and looked down. Cabbie's tongue was coming out of the mouth of the second drawer. Let's take
okay,
this
so
party
not paper.
Up a notch. Damp paper.
The fiery voice challenged before running their tongue over the front of his briefs again. He took another sip from his vodka bottle as he rode that tongue and felt it play with the seam of his nut purse.
Yep.
How do you feel about that one?
Nope, I don't like it at all. It's very descriptive. Nut purse. I mean, that's a new one. She and Holly Wilde should link up for a hot minute, because that's a new one.
I don't know if I would survive that collab.
For sure. So he says, fuck, Cabbie, you're so good at this. And Cabbie says, I could be even better if you filled me. Filling a file cabinet means paper.
Yeah, I don't know, man. Cabbie continues, please, Phil, which is funny because it could
fill
be,
me, please,
yeah.
Phil.
Please, Phil. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
it was never really wise to stick any part of yourself in a hole if you didn't know what was on the other side. You knew there was a chance something might bite. Glory holes at the porn arcade being the usual exception to the rule.
This confused
usual
me.
Exception and porn arcade.
This sentence
yeah.
was a roller coaster for me. Because I've never heard the word porn paired with the word arcade before in my life.
This is not even something that I want to Google.
No.
So usually I'm down to Google anything, but this I think I have reached my
glory holes I have heard of. I am familiar, but it was like glory holes, okay? At the porn arcade. The fucking what now? Being the usual exception. This is the thing people know about and often partake in?
Well, I guess glory holes would be the usual exception to sticking body parts in things that you don't know what's on the other side of. But also not a great choice regardless of any of that.
I am baffled.
That's pretty much how I went through all 34 of these pages.
I agree.
Pretty baffled. Which, again, we're almost a year in.
I know.
This is a wonderful reset for us.
It really, really feels like we're coming back to our roots.
Yeah, because I really was talking the other day about how I've said some really outrageous things on this podcast.
Mm-hmm.
But what was outrageous to me on episode 5... I'm completely desensitized to. Like, on episode 5, I am pretty sure I yelled at you to call me a good girl. That's just a Wednesday
I
now.
I think so.
Because I did something good.
Yeah. Yes. And I truly, it was like the start of something.
Yeah. Yeah, it unlocked something in me. Let's call it that. But
I'm
again,
so glad for both.
I'm so glad to have gotten back to something that we're not completely jaded anymore.
Yeah.
Which is
it's
lovely.
It's proof that there's hope for us.
Is there, though?
Yeah. Yes, there is. Trust me. Anywho.
So that's all it takes is for her to basically look up at him with those metal eyes of hers, theirs, and say please. And Phil pushes the tip in slowly, unsure of what it's going to feel like at first.
Mm-hmm.
Wooden or otherwise, not good.
See, and the thing that this filing cabinet mm-hmm. has been here.
Yeah, for a long time.
For a long, long time.
Yeah. How many other men have done the same thing?
How many men have done this? Was it ever used for its purpose? If its second drawer is a mouth, did they ever try to open it and put papers in it?
Also, who cleans that shit out?
Oh.
Could you imagine?
Nope. I don't. Stop.
Also, you walk into that office and you're like, what is that smell?
Yes. Jesus.
Something died in the filing cabinet.
Oh, God. The walls had a slight ribbing that rotated and pulled his body in while a tongue continued to swirl. It was unyielding. It felt tight and wet like an unending tunnel that squeezed him.
Why does this make me think of the Demogorgons in Stranger Things? Right? When the flower part of it opens up?
I have not seen Stranger Things.
What?
I know.
So we do get Cabby was in full control now. There was no thrusting out, only falling deeper and deeper into the tightest, wettest hole he's ever been in before. His legs lifted off the floor and he was hugging the cabinet, now feeling almost weightless. Chest height. So he's levitating by his dick. Feet off the ground.
Feet off the ground.
He fell into the passionate haze of endless cabinet cunt. But I thought it was the mouth.
And then it continues. Or was it a mouth?
Oh,
Phil
yeah.
didn't know. Phil didn't care. It was Cabby.
It was.
Phil couldn't hear his grunts and moans over the bass coming from his computer speakers. He couldn't tell if the vibration he could feel all over his body was coming from the sound or from the cabinet he was clinging to. Maybe it was both. There was a quake from inside the endless cave. The passion walls were quivering around his dick and everything was moving faster. Passion walls.
That's a new one. Again.
That is a new one.
She should get in touch with Holly Wilde.
I beg of her not to.
You never know. Wasn't until he was seeing nothing but black and he'd lost feeling in his legs that the cabinet started to let him go. Again, mind you, the cabinet is only holding him by
the dick.
Yes. He slid down to the floor, collapsing into what might be the greatest cum coma he'd ever had. That is something.
I mean, it's a visual. For sure.
Yeah, yeah.
He wakes up to the sun shining through his office window.
Sure does.
Panic began to set in. If the sun was up, then the 6 a.m. shift was going to come in soon if they hadn't already. He whipped around only to find his office door had already been closed. It was open before?
You were drinking and dancing and fucking your file cabinet with the door open.
With the door open.
I didn't even.
And the blinds to the plexiglass viewing window drawn. That's when he noticed the glass of water and bottle of aspirin on his desk. He is naked.
He is.
He crawled gingerly to the desk, the pulsing in his head adding an extra level of pain with every movement. When he grabbed the water and aspirin, a piece of paper fell to the floor. My office. Deb. Fuck. Phil knew this wasn't good. Deb was the site manager. Whatever happened while he was passed out included his boss's boss wanting to talk to him. What do you mean, whatever happened while you were passed out? You're naked. Nothing needed to happen except someone clearly saw you in this state.
Yeah. So he looks at the cabinet and says, this is your fucking fault, cabbie. No, I think it's probably the vodka's fault, which is yours.
Your fault. Yes. It all had to be some kind of alcohol-induced fever dream. Maybe someone spiked his vodka when he wasn't looking. College kids still did that kind of thing.
Why do the college kids know that you've got vodka in your desk?
Yeah. And
why does anybody know that you've got... Why do you have vodka in your desk?
And who's gonna spike it and then, like, and then walk away? Like, what do you mean? What do you mean?
So he gets dressed, glad that he had the forethought to take his clothes off so they weren't stained.
Or wrinkled.
And he walks to his boss's office. And she says, look, that shit was bad. I can't even bullshit you. But when it comes to breakdowns, I've seen way worse in that office. At least you were alone on that floor. I don't know what I would do.
As the boss's boss? Fire his
either,
ass. What do you mean?
No, I don't know what I would do as him.
Oh, sure. But neither you nor I would ever have to worry about what we might do in that situation.
That's
because
fair.
As we have discussed previously, we have self-preservation skills.
Yeah. It's bad. It's real bad. And she makes it worse.
Mm.
He says, someone found me on my floor. And she goes, Phil, Betty, you know, the little old lady from Squad 2, was walking to her desk for her shift. And Deb starts to laugh. The old crone thought you had a heart attack and died naked.
And he hunches over and puts his head in his hands and just starts whispering, holy shit, over and over and over again. And then Deb goes, that's not even the best part.
This is wild. Betty went to the manager's bullpen to get someone to call 911, and the only manager in was...
And Phil goes, fuck, not.
And she says, I fuck you not, Phil. Former kindergarten teacher Kelly was the only one in the bullpen. Now, kindergarten teachers get this stereotype of being sweet and innocent. No. Kindergarten teachers have to have a little bit of crazy to deal with a room full of six-year-olds.
Yes.
And live to tell the tale. Like, they have seen some shit. If you think about it, think about, like, how many teeth have fallen out in front of a kindergarten teacher. How many accidents they've had to clean up. All of this.
Yep.
So, kindergarten teachers may seem sweet, but that's not always the case. It's very rarely the case, in fact.
Yep. And Deb continues, apparently our little Kelly knew enough to tell you were alive and breathing. She shut your door, lowered your blinds, and called me. You want to know what she thinks happened? And he goes, probably not. And she goes, she thinks you overdosed on the devil's lettuce, got possessed by a demon, and now the entire building needs to be visited by a priest.
Which is wild, again, because a kindergarten teacher has seen some shit, but also she was a former kindergarten teacher, so she had the wherewithal to get out of there.
Yeah.
So she understood that he was not dead, closed the door, and then went to go tell Deb that something had gone on. So enough of a, somebody had a rough night. Let me just close this. We don't need to call 911. He'll be okay.
He'll be fine.
That's a teacher.
Yeah. So it gets even weirder. They, like, Phil finally breaks and starts to laugh because this is hilarious. And Deb grabs him a water bottle and gives it to him. And it says, look, I'm not going to ask. I can't say I totally care. Deb pauses to take a hit from her vape pen. I know how hard you work, and I appreciate that you aren't out here tasting the fresh meat that walks in here every week. You might be one of the most upstanding managers we've ever had. And after what I saw when I dropped off my note and gifts this morning, you definitely stood tall. So you don't need to be embarrassed about that, Mr. Shower, not a grower.
Which is wildly inappropriate.
Everything about this is inappropriate.
He's like embarrassed, but she goes, here's the thing. I have to put something in the file for HR. Like, I think if she had stumbled upon this, she probably would have just let it go.
Yeah.
But because so many other people
were involved.
I have to technically put you on a performance improvement plan for 6 months, but you and I both know it's bullshit paperwork I don't care about. You do your work. Your teams are always amazing. Your punishment is having to deal with the aftermath. That alone will teach you how to close your door when you're slamming your ham after hours.
Why didn't he close his door?
And then she says, maybe I'll get you a pocket pussy for Christmas.
That's so inappropriate.
Yes, it's wild. Absolutely wild.
So Phil gets back to his office. And Cabby asks, how bad is it? And he goes, what the fuck? You're real?
So, like, Cabinet couldn't have said something before he left. Like, hey, these are the people that came in here while you were naked on the floor.
Yeah. Like when he woke up and, like, dragged him.
Like, help him out. Like, whose side are you on, Cabby? Help a man out.
That's a really good point.
And so she... So they say, yes, Phil, I thought I proved that last night when I let you prove why you were named Phil.
I hate it. He says he's in too much pain for this. Slumping down into his office chair, he waited for the aspirin to dull the next wave of pain and maybe take an edge off the reality that he wasn't willing to accept. Seriously, it's not even the worst thing that's happened in this office. You'll be fine. Are you always so dramatic the day after? Cabby's eyes rolled in her top two drawers this time.
See? Identify your character.
It's just, like, I can't.
Yes?
I can't tell what's intentional and what's a mistake.
Yeah. So I'm going to go with the she then because
fine.
It started off as Janet and we didn't get any other information that would say otherwise. And yeah. Also, she can go by they anyway. It doesn't matter.
That's true.
She says, I think you could blame the vodka more than me, though I'll take credit for what you blew out of that tasty trunk and any dreams you had when you passed out. Ew. Tasty trunk.
No.
So he starts thinking about the night before, and he had never felt anything like the endless wet depth of that hole.
Ugh.
The way it swirled and slurped, that Cabinet was a needy little slut who never seemed to get enough until it got everything he could give. Also, this happened one time. Once.
Yep, once.
If there's a thing I hate about men, it's that they take one thing and turn it into all the time things. I'm going to throw that out there. Needy little slut who never seemed to get enough. One time. Yeah. Once. And it doesn't sound like you lasted very long. But
get
yeah, sure,
ass.
Never.
Get his
okay.
ass. Get him. So he's getting horny thinking about the needy little slut Cabinet.
Yeah.
And Cabby says, I see you looking at me, hot stuff. Why are you being all shy? But before he can do anything about it, a knock on his office door broke the tension that had started to build up in the room. Like, this scene was also unnecessary.
Well, yeah. So one of the younger call center employees, Amanda Sheldon, slid into the office and shut the door behind her. So she says, I was about to leave, but I was thinking maybe you might want some company. A man like you shouldn't have to spend his time alone. This just baffles me.
Yes.
In so many ways. One, this is happening at work. Two, people say stuff like that. Is
I
that?
Don't.
I mean, it's a book. I understand it's a book about fucking filing cabinet. So, like, No, but also this happens frequently in stories. So like, is this something that happens? I feel like I've never really been in the corporate world. So like,
it says it's hard to have a dress code in a call center. No customer ever walked through, so it was impossible to make an argument for caring what the agents wore. First and foremost, that has never stopped a company from having a dress code.
That's true.
Like, just for the record. Phil was pretty sure there had to be some sort of violation to the handbook in the overflowing top tit wiggling in front of his face. Were they bouncing because she was bouncing, or were they just constantly moving on their own? I'm sorry, are you so hungover that you've forgotten how physics work?
Yes, probably. Also, man with boobs in his face is like...
Given how many people seem to be flaunting their assets in front of him in the hopes that he'll do something about it. Pull yourself together, man.
Yes. So he starts to think about whether or not he should just kind of take her up on her offer. And then he thinks about putting her on top of Cabby and pulling those lace undies to the side just enough to uncover the slit of her wet and waiting pussy.
So he's imagining fucking his subordinate. And she says, is it true? And he goes, is what true? And she goes, that you have a little stash of vodka in here. Pour me some and let's have a little after work party. And he says, as fun as that sounds, my day isn't over yet. He dug deep for what little professional demeanor he had left. You and I both know it's not a great idea. And she jumps off the desk and adjusts her skirt and says, suit yourself, boss man. Jeremiah from accounting keeps top shelf scotch in his office. Probably tastes way better anyway.
Which is like, this is 22. That's a 22-year-old right there.
But also, like, I don't feel like a 22-year-old would appreciate
top shelf
scotch.
That's fair. But also saying, fine, you're not going to come and take what I'm offering you. Let me go. Somebody else has something better.
Yeah. I mean, that's very 22. But I think she would have preferred the vodka.
Yeah. As she leaves, she says, if you ever want me to taste test your liquor cabinet, you know my extension. And what a euphemism that she left him with there.
Yeah, indeed. But she leaves and Cabby coos from the corner. You totally could have, Phil. And I agree with Phil when he says, are all cabinets this horny or is that part of your magic? And Cabby goes, what I'm hearing is that you think I'm magical. Come over here and let's make some more fireworks.
So again, he's not done with his day. He just sent someone away. There are still people here
now. There are people in the building.
Yep. At least this time he locks his office door.
Thank God for small mercies. He does think about it because he says he already almost got fired because he fucked this file cabinet once. Did he really think it was a good idea to do it again? He peeked out the blinds that covered the plexiglass, making sure the call center floor was empty. He then went to his outside window and drew those blinds. The office became dark with only the glow of his computer screen creating enough light to navigate around his chair. And then he's still wearing the same clothes from yesterday.
Yep. And he takes those clothes off again.
Once again.
Folds them neatly.
Yep.
And then says, tell me, Cabby, do you actually want this as much as I do? Reaching out, he dragged two fingers across the top edge of Cabby's frame. Okay.
Okay. And Cabby says, Phil, I want more. I love the way you feel me. Please, Phil, give me more. It was the pleading that did it. The begging. Phil had never thought about having someone beg before, but the way Cabby looked up at him with their metal eyes and moaned with that voice, he couldn't keep himself behind his briefs any longer. Uh-huh.
He takes off his undies and he thinks to himself, he already knew how wet the inside of Cabby was, so it wasn't necessary to rub the pre-cum around his tip.
Uh-huh.
He knew the warm, slippery abyss that awaited him. It was the thought of it that made him want to stroke his cock a few times.
Yep. And then he pushed his tip down slightly, letting it find the entrance. Tongue swirled around his tip as Cabby started to suck him in. It took one thrust before he was fully attached and falling into the endless cavern of quivering need. There was a ripple constantly gripping down his cobra as it slithered farther and farther down into pleasure.
Yeah, nope.
This anaconda don't. This anaconda don't.
This podcaster don't. So Phil's whole body started to convulse, and he unloaded every single ounce of cum his body could produce into the thirsty hole that would not stop lapping up every centimeter of him until he was empty. Again, where is it going? Is it just going into the file cabinet? Because I have some questions about what else is in that drawer.
Uh-huh.
You know, some of those old file cabinets, the drawers are like stuck shut forever. That's why.
I hate that. I hate that so much. It says, Phil wasn't sure whether he backed out on his own or just slid down to the floor from exhaustion. He lay on his office floor, his dress socks askew. He needed to start keeping supplies in his office if he was going to keep doing this. His body was dehydrated and he just wanted to lie on his floor and enjoy this afterglow.
But we do get an epilogue, and it is not 1 year later.
Boy, isn't it? It is 20 years later.
And
20.
He is retiring.
He worked at this place for 25 years.
He was the site manager at this point, so that means that he had taken over Deb's job, and they had a retirement party. There were plenty of offers of sex as a going-away present. We do find out that he's married at this point.
Yes.
To someone that had worked there, seemingly.
In the quality assurance department, which is where the cuties work.
So they all know that he's married.
Yeah.
Which is shitty.
Yes.
Then after the office party, they go to the bar that they all used to go to.
Mm-hmm. Everyone was surprised when he wanted to take his file cabinet with him. Mm-hmm. It made no sense to have a file cabinet in his office since no one uses paper files anymore. Everyone signed their performance improvement plans by blinking while activating their implanted USky employee microchips. What a wild inclusion.
Yeah. But also, like, a little scary to think about.
I'm just going to breeze right past that. The real after party was after everyone left. His wife, former quality assurance manager turned corporate housewife, knew exactly what he would want to do. She put on some Usher in his home office, turned the lights low, and waited for him sitting on top of his favorite file cabinet. She knew why he wanted to bring this old thing home.
No, she did not.
No, she did not. She thinks she knows. The first time Phil ate her pussy, she was sitting on top of it. He ate her that night like he was a starving man, feeling nothing but pleasure. When she came all over his face, leaving him a sticky mess, he convulsed and did the same. Rebecca always knew she wanted to marry a man who loved to give as much as receive.
It's not good. And this is like upwards of 20 years of a marriage where she thinks that that is what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
Every time he eats her out on top of the file cabinet, when we find out that he still is fucking the file cabinet while he's eating out his wife. And she has no idea.
Yep. It's not great.
We get Rebecca's moans were filling the room, turning into screams of pleasure. Phil used the sounds of her desire to cover, undoing his belt and his zipper. He quietly slipped himself out of his pants and fed his cock into the waiting hole. The hole that helped him with stress at the end of the day and the sexual attention of another batch of agents who all seemed to have let the boss fuck me while I'm bent over his desk on some sort of dirty bingo card. It's gross.
It's very gross.
And it's like, you don't feel bad for the main character at any point in the story. And then you just start to be like, you're kind of a dick.
Yeah.
Yeah, you didn't fuck your employees, but also now you're married and you haven't told your wife about this whole situation.
Yes.
That's worse.
Yeah. So they both come and she looks down at him. And she's like, did you? And he goes, you taste so good, baby. You know what it does to me.
Uh-uh.
And he says he loved Rebecca with everything he ever had and ever would. Maybe someday he would tell her about Cabby. He had a few conversations with Cabby about it. They agreed preserving his only chance at true love was more important than the weird ass truth. Phil found happiness, which is rare in that dreary town.
Listen, if it is true love, the weird-ass truth is not going to stop that.
Uh-huh.
It might make her question some things for a little bit.
Uh-huh.
Maybe it'll take some coming around to. But if it's true love, the weird-ass truth is going to be fine with it. I don't like it. I don't like the way that the story ended.
I didn't like how it started.
Or how it middled.
or how it ended. And with all of that being said, how would you rate this one, Kay?
I'll give this one a 1.5.
Okay.
The writing was okay. The author is she's a comedian. It says her interest in writing sentient object smut comes from reading multitudes of it. Like, there were parts of it that were funny.
Yep.
I don't think that it was written in a serious kind of way. So it was funny enough, despite the fact that I did say, where the fuck did you find this? Like, yeah. I finished it.
Yeah.
It didn't take me forever to get through those 35 pages. So it was like quick enough and just kind of a, okay, whatever. What about you?
I think I'm going with 2 stars.
Okay.
I love an origin story for a sentient object. I guess. Feels like a monkey's paw of a story. Like, I got what I wanted, but at what cost?
Yep.
The writing was good. And, like, I asked what the fuck so many times while reading it. But it was, like, in a fun way, I guess. Yeah. Like, it's been a while since I've been so truly, like, what the actual fuck am I reading?
What in the smut? And,
yes. What in the smut is this? I don't know. I appreciated that.
Yeah.
I really did. So,
Bring us
stars.
Back to our roots.
Thank you, Katie Epoch, for this journey that you've taken us on. So, how and who did you cast for this?
So, I only cast Phil and Cabby.
Okay.
We got no description. We got nothing other than he was hot and he was working in corporate America.
Uh-huh.
My casting for this came from another show. I'm not even sure if this was a relationship on the show, but it was two of the main characters in that show.
Yes.
So for Phil, I went with Gabriel Mock.
From Suits.
He's hot. I mean,
I don't think he would be hot with a buzz cut, though.
No, I do. He's just covered up his hair. I do. I think he'd still be hot with a buzz cut. And then for Cabby, going off of that same show, and I don't know how this would be taken in the current climate of the world right now, but she's kind of on the outs with royalty anyway. Meghan Markle. I mean, I have no, there's no rhyme or reason behind it. Again, this one was so what the fuck that, like, I was just like, corporate America? Yeah, Suits. That makes sense. This
Perfect.
Is what I'm going to go with for this one.
Perfect.
So it was not, there was no real hard thought behind this one at all this week.
I love that. It's fine. The fuck of it all permeated casting as well.
Absolutely. So also in the vein of what the fuck, earlier this week, you sent me a message and said, what is this?
What the fuck?
So what are we reading next week?
We're reading Fake It Till You Mate It by Sarah Spade, which is a possum shifter romance.
I cannot wait. I can't wait. Also, Fake It Till You Mate It is a popular book title.
Oh, is it really?
There are at least 4 or 5 other books that I saw with the same title. This one is by Sarah Spade.
Mm-hmm.
I am interested to see where this takes us.
I am as well. I think it's going to be an experience.
I am hopeful that it'll change my perspective on possums.
Yeah.
Because did you know that they don't typically get rabies? People think that possums are like these like rabid creatures because of the hissing and stuff like that. But they're actually a pretty clean species. Like they're not.
Huh.
I don't know if it's not possible for them to get rabies or if it's just very, very, very unusual, but they're not usually a rabid animal. Fun fact.
That is a fun fact. I mean,
so I wonder
I,
if
I
that
know,
will
I
come
kind
up.
Of, I respect an animal that when scared pretends to be dead. So I can, I'm pleased to learn that they don't often get rabies. I think I'm going to like possum after this.
I hope so. Are you reading anything else currently?
I am. I received a copy of The Book of Lovers by November Juliet. It's a really lovely read. Highly recommend. It's a couple of like short stories. And I think it's just a really realistic look at sex and relationships and kind of like what kind of situations you find yourself in if you are like a little bit daring.
Okay.
How about you?
Well, I did just download A Vow for the Vamp by friend of the podcast, Settle Meyer. She does have a new Gargoyle book coming out, I believe, in the next 2 months or so.
Yeah,
so
it just went
Val
to beta
for the
readers.
Vamp will be one of those to kind of get you caught up on some of the characters. We've got Gaga for the Gargoyle behind my head here if you're watching the video version of it. And so that's on my Kindle to be read soon. I'm excited to read Fake It Till You Made It, though.
It should be fun.
If you have made it this far on such a wild, wild ride today, we appreciate you more than you can understand. We hope that you, too, enjoyed us getting back to our roots with some of the what in the smut of it all. So don't forget to like, follow, subscribe, tell your friends, leave a review. But with that,
we are at our wit's end.
We'll see you next time.
Was that as good for you as it was for me? You have been listening to the What in the Smut podcast with